This episode of UK Low Carb Podcast is sponsored by Deliciously Guilt-Free. Enjoy the show.
It felt like I suddenly just became allergic to everything. Everything I ate, I was in pain. I got to the point where I couldn't work because I couldn't even function. I just couldn't even leave my apartment. I was in so much pain.
What I have learned over the past 2 years has been magnificent. You know, it's completely changed my life.
And so you're not going to die if you don't eat carbohydrates, but you will die if you don't eat fat and protein.
The energy I have, the life I have that has changed so amazingly in a few years, proves to me that what I'm eating is only doing me good.
I'd love to meet them because they changed my life, basically.
So I've lost now, I'm about 3 pounds off losing 5 stone.
Hello and welcome to UK Low Carb. This is your podcast, the podcast where we share the real life stories and experiences of people like you and me, people who follow the low carb or keto diet. So join me, Dan Grief, and my co-host each Friday to hear their story. And if you'd like to get involved, then please email me, dan@uklowcarb.com, or join our growing Facebook group, UK Low Carb. And finally, please rate and review this podcast on Apple Podcasts so that we can get the message out about the amazing benefits of the low-carb and keto lifestyle. Now, this podcast is sponsored by my business, Deliciously Guilt-Free. Just use the code PODCAST and you can have 20% off your order. On with the show! Hello and welcome to UK Low Carb. This is a podcast where we share individual people's stories to help build the low carb community, not just here in the UK, but also around the world. I'm your host, Dan Grief, and I believe that change comes from grassroots movements. And I think that if we pull together, we can really make a change in the world together as well. I just want to say, if you want to come onto this show, you're more than welcome because I want to hear from you. So my email address is dan@uklowcarb.com. You can join our growing Facebook group, which is UK Low Carb. I'm actually doing this recording right now for my stand-up desk. I've had it now for about a week or two. I absolutely love it. It's been incredible. And what I like about it is I've just been standing on my feet the whole time. The first few days, you're quite tired doing that, but now I'm getting used to it. And I can actually feel I'm much more aware of my body. Whereas when I sat down, I was kind of slouching in my chair quite often, especially after a few hours. Whereas now I do most work standing up and then sit down later in the afternoon when I need it. So that's great. So some news quickly. We do, of course, have Professor Tim Noakes coming on the 6th of May, which is not too far away now. It's only next week. Details of the live, if it is going to be a live, will come out next week and early in next week as well. So keep an eye out for that. And then hopefully you can actually meet him as well to ask him a question, which is what I'm really passionate about, is bringing his knowledge and wisdom to you, but in the most direct way possible. So if you want to be on the podcast asking him your question, that's even better. When I started this podcast originally, it was about sharing stories, but I also see it now as being a case of, you know, helping the low-carb community however I can. And if I've got a platform to help you meet your idols, then why not? Now, before we get into today's show, I actually do have a review to share. There's a reason I said that incorrectly, because this review is particularly lovely, and she mentioned something in it which I'm going to trip over left, right and centre, because I'm now very aware of how I speak. So I'll try to do this review justice. This is from Rachel D. 1973. She says, best low-carb podcast. This is the best low-carb... Already it's happened. This is the best low-carb podcast worldwide, in my opinion. I listened to loads of others before I found this one. I've been low-carb since late September 2020, after a lifetime of struggling with my weight and yo-yo dieting on unsustainable low-fat diets. And she put in brackets SW, which I think we all know what that means. I'm loving real low-carb food and fasting. I've been listening on my daily walks, and I'm sorry to say I've caught up to the present. So just one a week for me now. Dan is articulate, intelligent, enunciates beautifully, got through it, thank goodness, has some fantastic guests and knows how to ask the questions listeners would like him to ask. He's also very modest. Okay, reading this is quite hard because it's about me. It's like being at my own funeral. So thank you, Rachel. And I hope I was modest enough to read it and Yeah, I forgot through it, okay. And she also says, the content is always relevant, and by the time he spoke about his own journey in life, I wanted to hear about it. Keep up the good work, Dan. Thank you, Rachel. That is so lovely. And if you want to leave a review, that would mean a lot to me, because, you know, I'm making these in my spare time because I love doing it, and seeing a review like that just makes me glow inside. I'm so happy. So thank you so much for that. Before I go into today's show, I just want to say, you know, if you want to come on the show and actually tell your story, and Rachel, if you're one of those people, just get in touch. I want to hear from you as well. I genuinely love hearing people's stories, and everyone's got a particular angle to tell, which is what I really enjoy as well. So yeah, please come on, Rachel, if you're interested. Okay, so today's show. Now, I'm talking to Nicole, and Nicole came on to our big conversation episode in December, or maybe it's a bit earlier than that, maybe September time. She herself has got a very interesting job. However, because of the lockdown, she's not able to go out to sea. She's not a sailor. She's actually a singer who works on these amazing cruise ships that go around the Bahamas and all over the place. And she was just talking about what it's like to be, you know, keto in that environment, but also what it's been like the last year. So it's quite a personal journey for her the last 12 months, as she's been grounded quite literally in the UK. So we went into some of that and about her sort of personal story, but also went into kind of her personal struggles that she had with regards to her gut health, and how actually that was, you know, not only a problem when you're doing most jobs, but as a performer, that's a particular worry that she had, but how keto was the best way to ease those issues, and how when she's on keto now, how much healthier she is, how she uses it for her workouts. She also uses exogenous ketones, and that's what she was talking about in the big conversation. So really interesting and really lovely person. I hope you enjoy this episode. All I'm going to say now before I hand over to Nicole is have a great weekend, and I will see you all back here again next week, but of course hopefully in person live, well, in person via Zoom I should say, but live, when I get to talk to the amazing Professor Tim Noakes. Have a great weekend, everyone. Take care, and over to Nicole. Okay, so I'd like to say a massive hello to Nicole, who came onto our big conversation episode end of last year sort of time. Actually, it's probably like a bit earlier than that. Anyway, you came on then and you were really good in that episode. And I said, look, I really want to get you on again to talk about your story because you're a really interesting and wonderful person. So thank you for coming on UK Low Carb, Nicole.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Great. I always start with a compliment. And then after that, it's like, where do I go? You know, you're thinking, oh, he's being nice to me. Then I ask the killer question. So so I was going to say, Nicole, I know that you came on the big conversation before. You're talking about exogenous ketones at the time. And I was just actually just talking to you before the call because I've been trying some exogenous ketones, which I hope you don't mind me starting here because I think it's a really interesting conversation. And I was saying that I've been trying these for the last a couple of days now, because confession time, Mark Jackson sent me some bits to try. I bought them from him and he sent me them, and I hadn't actually, I think that's in November, and now we're recording this in April, late April, and I still hadn't have actually, you know, taken any. And then Nicole said to me, just get yourself a Bloomin' Shaker offline and go and try some. So I have, and they're delicious, I must admit. I love the taste. And actually, I have felt really quite mental health-wise amazing on them. And I was just saying to you at the beginning of the call, and I thought we could carry on that conversation, how, you know, I don't know if I'd continue with them continually. They're certainly a good experience to have. And then you mentioned about having them before a workout. So I'm just going to say, before we get into anything else, what are your views on and when to take them and how many, et cetera?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have there's such a range now of ketones, and there's a massive range over in the US that we're getting more of. I would normally take them 20 to 30 minutes before a workout, purely because they just support my kind of, not just my physical energy, but my brain function as well. They just give me that focus to get through a workout. And I've been doing a lot of weight training specifically more recently. So they really help with that. And we've gotten one particular product, which is called Black Label, and it is 50% more caffeine and 30% more ketones. So it is much more like a pre-workout would be with that higher caffeine content. So it just really gives you kind of like that massive boost of energy. But yeah, I normally take 20 to 30 minutes before my workout just to kind of get the best.
Oh, so that's the amount of time it takes to kind of get into your bloodstream and and be working in your body.
They say anything up to an hour, obviously before your body goes and kind of uses the ketones and you kind of register as in ketosis. But for me, I've kind of found 20 to 30 minutes is the optimum for me.
Okay. And I guess that's the other thing as well, right? It probably also depends on what you're doing. So if you're eating a McDonald's and then, you know, full sugar everything and full carb, then you had this, that's going to be a problem, right? Whereas if you're fasted beforehand, the impact's going to be quite drastic. Or if you're going very low carb already, then it's going to be much more of an impact, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I always do a fasted workout anyway. I just think that it's better, in my opinion. I mean, I've tried a workout on a full stomach and almost threw up, so
not
the best idea.
No.
I always do a fasted workout.
It's funny, you don't see like athletes eating roast dinners before they go for their runs, you know. They are, you know, fasted and ready to go,
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, they definitely have a much better effect when you have them fasted, in my opinion. Because, they go kind of straight, you go straight in on the ketones and the caffeine.
Okay.
All caffeine free.
All caffeine free. Okay then. So it'd just be really good now, I think, just to go back through a little bit of your story, because I don't know much about you and I'd love to know more, and I'm sure many people would as well. And like I always say in these episodes, it's about really people might listen and be able to relate to where you are, but more importantly, I think, maybe relate to where you've been in the past, and you can show them what you've done in your life and how you've made changes and the benefit and what it's been. And that'd be great to hear. So when you were growing up, what was food like in your family?
Goodness, when I was growing up, my family are massive foodies. a lot of food, really. And I think that, I mean, this is in my opinion, I think that we potentially had two bigger portions when I was growing up anyway as well. My dad's a massive like foodie, as is my mum. So growing up, it was just like what you would normally expect, you know, like carbs, veg and meat, which is fine and balanced and what you would expect. And quite a big portion of, if that makes sense.
All too often it made sense for
right?
me growing up, yeah. And still does now most of the time, unfortunately.
And there was always variety, but when you look back now, I'm just thinking, not the best choices. Like we'd be having meat and veg, but then we'd be having like potatoes with it and sauce on the meat, like sugary sauce, like if it was like barbecue or something like that. You know, or spaghetti bolognese, as much as that's lovely. Things like that. So yeah, there was always a variety, which was nice. And my mum's always cooked. She's never been kind of a like throw a pizza in the oven kind of person. So that was good. I always had the variety, which means, you know, I'm not a very fussy eater now, because I've always had that variety in my life.
That's good.
And
so, you know, for instance, when you're growing up, do your family have a tradition of any health conditions like type 2 diabetes or anything like that at all? Or, you know, are they all pretty healthy?
They're all pretty healthy, to be honest. I mean, my mum's sisters, two of them have diabetes. So it's definitely something that's there in my family. My mum doesn't. No one on my dad's side does. So there is an element of that in my family, but not my immediate family. My mum and dad are quite healthy, as is my brother as well. So
yeah. And then through like your teenage years and going to adulthood and everything else, like did you learn to cook quite early on, or
I did,
a bit more relaxed about it?
I did actually. I mean, I love cooking, and I think that's why I love kind of doing what I'm doing now, because I cook for myself pretty much 99% of the time. I love cooking and I love kind of doing different things, and I wanted to learn from early on. I think because my mum cooked, I saw her cooking and wanted to learn from her, and, you know, do, you know, all these amazing, wonderful things that she's always done. And like Christmas, for instance, like she does her own stuffing that's like a secret recipe that nobody knows and things like that. So for me, I really wanted to learn from her and how to, you know, how to cook and how to experiment.
So did she pass on that recipe, or is it still completely secret?
It's still a secret. I'm not allowed to know until I've got my own family.
Oh, I see. It's like, right, you've now made it this far through life.
Right,
you've got
exactly.
Seven kids at last. You can be given the recipe.
Seven kids. I don't think I'll ever get there.
You might look at it and you're like, is that it? You've just got figs in it.
So easy.
Oh, right. Okay. Right. A bit of sage, and that's it. And goji berries. Oh, come on. Yeah. There's a reason why it's secret.
Exactly.
I love that.
So I think it would be great as well to just think about, and people I'm sure don't know this necessarily about you, your career is a really interesting one, isn't it? And I would love to share a bit about that, because especially the last year, it's been affected majorly because of COVID. But I just want to know a bit about your career and your aspirations for the future, because this is really exciting. Yeah. And then how does that relate to your health? So go on, Nicole, tell them, knock them dead.
So I'm a professional singer. I work on cruise ships and have kind of travelled all over the world, as it were. I have worked abroad in other countries, but yeah, most recently I was working on cruise ships, and I was actually in Florida when everything went into lockdown and had to fly home from Florida where I was rehearsing with my band at the time. So yeah, I mean, that's been rough. I've been home now for just, 13 months, which seems crazy. I can't believe that it's been that long. You know, that was my absolute dream job. I've worked abroad and I've trained as a singer. I did a degree in musical theatre and I've been working towards, and my dream job was working on cruise ships. It's what I wanted to do. Yeah. And it was exactly what I wanted it to be. It was a dream.
I can imagine. So what that lifestyle is like, I suppose, in a day you're working till quite late in the evening, but do you have to also start early in the morning in that sort of job?
No. You get all day. So when you're a singer, when you're in the bands, you work evenings. So when you're in ports, you get to get off, explore the port, go and eat good food, sunbathe, and then get back on the ship. And we work from anything from kind of, we could start work at 6 p.m., but we could also start work at 9 p.m.
Wow.
But then you work till like 1 o'clock in the morning.
Are you like a night owl sort of character?
I am, massively.
Yeah, me too. Massively, that seems like a perfect job to me. See, this is what I find sometimes. You know, you're like feeling a bit sluggish in the mornings, going, oh, I've got to just get on or whatever and, you know, get on with my day. I'll have an early night tonight so I don't feel like this the next day. And especially with kids, you do have to get up early, unfortunately. And then like 1 in the morning last night, I was like, right, I'm buzzing. Energy going through my veins. Yeah. Could work and work and work. I just love it. I love night.
That's when I do my best housework, 1 o'clock in the morning.
You're doing housework?
Genuinely. Yeah, I've done housework at 1 o'clock in the morning.
I wouldn't do that. Actually, I imagine your family love that.
Much energy.
What's that noise? She's having a little hoover. Get up. Come on.
Don't. It's horrendous. I do. I get a burst of energy and I just, get on one, really.
I like that. Yeah, I'm the same. And I think the time of day is really important to know for everybody, isn't it? It doesn't matter if you're an early lark or if you're a night owl. Knowing when you work and what your energy levels are is actually really important. Mm-hmm. And I think also working out when you should eat in relation to that, because some people need to eat at different times for that reason, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. It's bizarre. I mean, I just don't eat in the morning anymore because I have... And I mean, for me, obviously, we spoke about ketones. I have ketones in the morning, almost in place of breakfast and a coffee, and don't need anything until lunch. And that's just the way my body works. I just don't need it, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I think many of us feel that way. I think the longer you can go from waking up to eating, the better, in a way, because you don't feel hungry, do you? And then it depends on how you break that fast as well. So just about your career then, just come back to the ships and everything. You're living this amazing lifestyle. What about the food element? Because how much are in control of what you eat in that sort of environment are you? Is it like a big buffet thing? We can just pick what you want, but there's only a few options. I mean, do you get to make your own stuff or not?
It's an interesting one. And it's one of my biggest challenges with being keto or trying to be as keto as possible. And, you know, finding the balance with what's actually available on ships. Yeah. So... And I mean, I've been keto for quite a long time now, on and off. But whenever I've kind of put weight on, it's always been when I've been on a ship, you can't cook for yourself. You live in a cabin, and I mean, you're lucky if you get a fridge. So I've had a fridge a couple of times, so I've been able to kind of store a few bits and pieces, like avocados, which are a commodity on a ship. They're like gold dust. So I buy them off and keep them in my fridge, and then take them down with me. When you're a singer, you account a staff, so you can access passenger restaurants. So you can book like a dining one, or you can just go to the buffet, and it is a buffet. Normally, there's quite a lot of choice, but there isn't a lot of choice where the meat isn't covered in a sauce or cooked in something that you don't know what's in it. And a lot of the time, you know, especially on American ships, they tend to add a lot of stuff to the food and you don't know what's in it. So you could be trying to make the best choice that you think that you're, you know, the best choice in your mind, but actually it's not entirely the right thing or the best thing for you. And I mean, the late nights, I'm working with a lot of musicians and other night owls, they have something called Midnight Mess.
Okay.
So at midnight, they have the like the crew canteen opens downstairs and they've got like chips, chicken, like fried chicken, pizza, all that kind of stuff.
Right.
And you've just done 4 hours on stage.
So it's like a junk food gathering.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And you're knackered and you've got adrenaline because you've been working for 4 hours on stage. And everybody goes down.
You don't go to bed after that, do you? I know what it's like when I've been at political rallies and stuff and I've been doing speeches and answering questions or whatever. And I've thought to myself, you know, you get back at midnight, you're like, there's no way I can go to sleep now because I've just got to run around the track a few times to kind of, you know, just burn off a little bit of this energy, you know?
Absolutely. I could never go to bed straight after a gig. Just too much, way too much energy.
Yeah. Okay. So in that case, then, I think the question I want to really ask you is, what made you go to keto? Okay. So what was happening in your life to make that decision?
Mm-hmm.
And also, like, how did you find out about it? And what steps did you go firstly into keto?
So the way I got into keto is quite interesting. About 5 years ago, I was working over in Cyprus as a singer, and I got really, really, really sick. And no idea why. I just, it felt like I suddenly just became allergic to everything. Everything I ate, I was in pain. I got to the point where I couldn't work because I couldn't even function. I just couldn't even leave my apartment. I was in so much pain, you know, let alone sing. So I ended up going to a hospital over there and they said I had gastroenteritis. They put me on, I was on antibiotics, I was on a drip, I was on this, that, and the other. And that kind of continued and continued until I finally ended up coming home. And I was just in such a bad way. I'd put on, because when I went out to Cyprus, I was probably my lightest weight, and I'd put on about 2.5 stone in 6 months. Not really knowing how or why. And it took them about 2 years in this country to get me a diagnosis. Well, I say a diagnosis, very loose. But basically I ended up with IBS because they think that I actually contracted a parasite from the water in Cyprus.
Oh, I was going to say, what was it in the food? But actually it was the water. Okay,
And they think that what happened was it just attacked my digestive system and it then just decided it just didn't function properly. So what they now think is that I have a dysfunctioning intestine, so where it can't process certain foods. So he said to me, at the time, and I ended up seeing a specialist. I mean, I had every scan under the sun, and I ended up seeing this really, really, really good specialist who really kind of knew his stuff and had done a lot of extra research as well around, you know, around your intestines and digestion and things like that. And at the time, I'd never heard of keto. I'd never heard of kind of low carb, really, other than kind of Atkins. And he said to me, I think, because at that time I wasn't eating gluten, I wasn't eating dairy, and I wasn't drinking caffeine. Mm-hmm. I was convinced I was intolerant to all of those things.
Yeah.
And he said to me, I don't think that you are intolerant to all of those things. I think that gluten and carbs are causing you a problem. I don't think your body can break them down properly. Right. He said, so go back to basics. And then try cutting out carbs. And he actually referred me to the Real Meal Revolution, which is based on Banting, which is very close to keto. So I actually started doing that. And about a month later, I went and saw him again after doing it. And he said, have you had a flare up in the last month? And I said, no. And that is the first time that I hadn't had a flare up I was having flare-ups every week. So I'd gone 4 weeks without having a flare-up. And for me, for the first time in 2 years, it was unbelievable. And I couldn't believe it. I was not in constant pain. And for me, I'd been in constant pain all the time. So it just completely ruled my life. Like, I couldn't go out. I was always worrying about being in pain when I was out with my friends, not knowing, you know, where the nearest toilet was, or, you know, not knowing whether there was something that I could eat where I go. And I mean, I still worry about that now, but it's a lot less because there are options out there. And at that time, I didn't really know what was causing it. So I was always kind of in fear of eating. And because my body wasn't digesting the food properly, that's why I put the weight on, because my body wasn't taking the right nutrients from the right food, because it was struggling to break down the carbs and it was struggling to break down the gluten. So I went and saw him after the 4 weeks, and he said, okay, add caffeine back in. And at that point, I hadn't had a coffee for 2 years, because the last time I'd had a coffee, I was so instantly sick, and I was on a road trip with my friends in Cyprus.
And so you associated the two together, and actually it wasn't the caffeine. Yeah.
No, and I now drink caffeine every day, and I'm absolutely fine.
You know what? What an absolute miserable kind of prison that was that you were in. But the thing is, though, I mean, okay, so many of us in our careers or whatever we do, we've got the ability most of the time. Okay, when I was a teacher, actually, you didn't, because you had to be 1 hour in front of a class, and then you've got a 5-minute window, then the next class. You can't just say, see you later, guys, I'm out of here, because, of course, you're responsible for them. But most jobs, you know, you do have the ability to go to the toilet when you want to. But doing your job, and that must be terrifying. I mean, being on stage and feeling that way. I mean, firstly, how can you sing and do your job properly if you're in agony? You can't, I imagine, very well.
No.
And secondly, you must... Oh, I can't even... I actually shudder a little bit thinking about that. Like, having that... I've never had IBS or anything, but I can imagine in that situation being terrified of, what do I do? I've got to be on stage. I can't have this.
Yeah. I mean... Yeah, it's horrible. And I just think back to now, because I still have the odd flare up every now and then, but nothing like what I used to have. You know, I was just doubled over in agony, not being able to even get out of bed. The fear of then going to work and then thinking, oh gosh, I might have an episode at work, because a lot of the time we were working in hotels. So we were able to eat the food in hotels before our gig. So I'd go early, have my dinner, and then do my gig. And it has happened before where I was in the middle of a gig and I would have a flare up. And you just, it's one of those things you just have to work through.
How quick are we talking? Like, can it just be literally from not feeling anything to you're suddenly in pain? Is that how it works?
It's so different dependent on what, and I mean, at that time I didn't know what the difference was and what was causing it, because I was I was still over in Cyprus and I hadn't had a diagnosis. Now it's a little bit, it can be a little bit longer. I would say
the period of time before
it happens. So it can normally be about half an hour now, but I normally know what I've eaten. So like the other day I did, you know, the other day we've got a lodger here. And he ordered a pizza, a massive pizza. I don't eat pizza. I'm gluten intolerant. I don't even know why I did it. But he offered me a slice and I had like a tiny, tiny, like real, like tiny bit. And within half an hour, I was in pain. And I was like, why have I done this to myself? but it's just one of those things.
It's the lure of carbs. They trick us back in. Like the sirens on the rocks.
They do. And even though it causes me pain, I still do it every now and then. And it's, you just think, why have I done this? But it's nowhere near as bad as it was, because it's just that one time. I think before I had that build up, and every time I then had it, it was just making it worse and worse and worse.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah. Whereas now you've gone low carb for so much longer, or keto, that it really, your guts had a lot more chance to heal and, I suppose, calm down.
Absolutely.
A bit.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Okay. Definitely. So the next thing then, those 2 years, there must be incredibly depressing, I'd have thought, mental health wise, thinking I'm always ill. I mean, you know, prolonged chronic illness is miserable. And I think that, especially when you don't know what's causing it and you're cutting out so much, but feeling sick. I mean, we don't like cutting out things we like as people anyway. But if you're saying you like coffee and you can't have it and you're still sick, I mean, was your mental health ever affected?
100%. I think, you know, from a social aspect as well, that was massively affected, because I was going out with friends, and because anything, you know, anything like that chronic illness that's invisible, that people can't see, that people don't understand it. And I would be absolutely fine and then not absolutely fine. You know, I would be in a lot of pain and people can't see that. And they go, well, you were fine a minute ago.
Yeah.
Or, you know, or, well, what did you eat? I'd be like, well, I don't know, because I don't, at that time, I didn't know what was causing the problem. And I, you know, I was going, well, I haven't eaten any gluten or I haven't eaten any dairy. I don't know what's causing the problem. And yeah, had a massive effect on my mental health because I didn't want to go out because I was worried about having a flare up. B, I was worried about being difficult in a restaurant, for instance.
Yeah.
You know, kind of going, well, what's in this? What's in this? Can I have the allergen book so I can see what's in it?
That's not easy, is it? I mean, you get used to it after a while, but when Besma had a gestational diabetes, you got used to, you know, asking what's in the ingredients. And then my kids both have allergies. So we have to, when we go somewhere, well, we haven't done that for a while, but we will eventually go back to these places and say, can I have a look at the allergy menu? And I know what you mean. I guess you can feel there's a social awkwardness, like, oh, can we just get some food in? And you're the one who's saying, no, I've got to look at this menu, make sure I'm okay. But I hope people are coming around to that more and more now, because it is hopefully more common than a sight to behold than it used to be.
Absolutely. I think people have gotten a lot more used to it and the world has gotten better, especially with gluten intolerance. There's, you know, there's gluten-free menus everywhere now, whereas 5 years ago there wasn't. You know, it was very much, it wasn't as kind of prevalent as it is now. And I was lucky at the time, I say lucky, my best friend, who's in my same group of friends that we always used to kind of go for dinner with, she had Lyme's disease a few years ago.
Is this where, like, they get urine from rats? Is that how it's spread or something? That gets into your water?
It's from a tick. So she got bitten by a tick.
Oh, a tick. So I'm getting mixed up with someone, another
and
one.
It burrows, burrows itself in and it's carrying the disease and it gets into your bloodstream. So that's made her, that has made her allergic to a lot of things. Like, she can't have sugar. So she doesn't drink alcohol. She can't have sugar. She can't have eggs, celery, crazy things. So I almost had like a little partner in crime when we'd go out for dinner, because it'd be me and her with the allergen books being like, right, what can we eat? And it was nice to have that support there. So I wasn't completely alone in it. But I mean, you know, other people still used to be like, oh, can you guys stop being so difficult? Well, I really wish that I wasn't this difficult, but I am.
Yeah, because it's so hard for you sat there for 5 minutes. I'd rather be in like a massive amount of agony later. Is that better for you to not waste your time? I mean, that's so selfish of them, isn't it, really?
It is. And I think that it was just an ignorance and a lack of understanding there. You know, they're a lot better now. And actually, you know, I think there is so much more understanding around it anyway. When one of the friends that used to have a go at me about it, she's now found out she's lactose intolerant. So she's a lot more understanding.
She now understands what it's like herself. You know what, though? I do think that we have, many of us have, not all of us, but many of us have intolerances to things. And you don't really know you do, because, okay, most people are not feeling the kind of pain that you're in. You know, they might just feeling like, well, yeah, I always go to the toilet and have, you know, okay, we won't get into details, but, you know, like a bit of a loose whatever movement. Or I generally get a little bit, you know, like crampy in the evening in my stomach, you know, and you get used to it sometimes. And what I've realised is that I actually think that I may have a bit of a gluten thing as well, because when I've bought some low-carb bread from another very good company, and I've had that, like, you know, to eat or whatever, I've noticed then the next day I've had some issues and I'm like, oh, okay, that's interesting. Maybe when I was eating bread all the time, I just got used to that feeling and I've just now not used to it. But then when I have this bread again, I'm like, oh, I'm suddenly getting like a bit of stomach cramps and stuff. So I just wonder if that's happening to me. And certainly the bloating I noticed, like, even with low-carb bread, I'm like, this must be gluten then. It's not the carbs in it, it's the gluten probably.
The bloating with gluten is real, and I think that it affects a lot of people. My brother, for instance, he's a vegetarian, out of choice. He has been there for about 3 years, but obviously for him then it limits his food options. So he does eat quite a lot of carbs and he eats quite a lot of bread. And more recently he's been saying, Nicole, like, I am so bloated and uncomfortable. Like, what's going on? What did you eat today? And he's like, oh, I had a pizza and then I had some toast and I had this. And I'm like, I think it's gluten. Yeah. So he's now trialing kind of cutting it out, because it can be really uncomfortable, especially when you have a lot of it. And I think that's a shame with a lot of low carb bread, is there's still gluten in it. Because they use the, what is it, vital wheat or gluten. Vital gluten. Yeah. And you just think.
I think it's vital wheat gluten. Yeah.
Yeah. which is a real shame. I still have a reaction to it. I've tried it. So I thought, well, it's not as much as would be a normal bread, but yeah, it still does cause a problem.
Yeah, I mean, some people are fine with it, but I guess most people probably are, because otherwise we'd have given up bread a long time ago. But it's just, yeah, just for me, I just notice the bloating is happening and I just get that sort of cramps and stuff. So I'm trying to work on a bread recipe that's gluten-free, but it's not as easy, I must admit, you know, because I've done it at home a few times with gluten.
For that.
It's way, the rise and everything is so much easier, but you know, without it, I'm going to just, you know, I'll work out something, I'm sure. Anyway, let's not talk about bread for a second there. Let's carry on with the journey. So
carried away.
Okay, so after that then, you said the change was really rapid. You say 4 weeks and you didn't have a flare up.
Mm-hmm.
And so what were you doing? What were you eating? What was your daily, like, you know, meal plans roughly?
So I bought the Real Meal Revolution book. So a lot of it I was following from there. So I was making... I was making like seed crackers with psyllium husk. I was, you know, eating chicken cooked in butter, or like casseroles with butter and cream and you know, just some veg on the side and things like that. And it was bizarre. To start off with, I really, really craved like potatoes, things like that. Not pasta and bread, because I'd not been eating those anyway, but really craved like potatoes mainly. Yeah. You know, and kind of feeling like, because of the way that I was brought up with a balanced meal, like you have your carbs, your carbs, your veg and your meat, and then just having the veg and the meat.
Yeah.
That for me was a very weird change. And my mum, bless her, at the time did it with me because she wanted to, you know, see if she could lose a bit of weight and had done some research into it. And said, you know, if you're going to do this, I want to do it with you to make it a bit easier. And, you know, we can just do it together. So that made it a bit easier, because what we were doing, we were cooking meals together and then adding a carb element for my dad.
Yeah, great. And that's the answer, isn't it? Like, yeah, have the same food as everyone else, but they can then add their extra carbohydrate thing if they want to.
Definitely.
I think that's really worth it.
Yeah. And that really helped. That really worked. You know, and we both lost weight quite quickly on it as well as obviously me feeling better.
It's nice you did it together. That's real sort of solidarity, isn't it? To think,
definitely.
Yeah, we're doing this. How are you getting on? How do you think this goes? And is that a nice meal option? Yeah, let's try it. It's quite a nice conversation to have, isn't it?
Absolutely. And then we just take it in turns cooking as well, and getting all the different ingredients and things. So it was definitely, it was a learning curve, but it was nice to kind of do that learning curve together. And it's funny to look back then, because we were like this in the book all the time, being like, or checking keto lists, like, what can I eat and what can't I eat? I don't know. Now, it's funny, isn't it? When you've done it for so long, you're just like, well, that's just my life and I know what I can and can't eat now. Which is funny.
Well, what are carbs? That's the other thing. You know, like, at first you kind of think, well, okay, I can eat this then. So I can eat carrots probably. They're probably fine. And you're like, oh no, that's really carby. And oh, I didn't realise. I just thought it's a healthy thing to eat, you know.
And now I wouldn't touch a carrot.
Yeah, exactly.
So
that's what I mean.
I see carrots and go, can't eat that.
Yeah, exactly. It's like a little, it's like a spud really, isn't it? I mean, you know, it's really sweet when you taste it as well. But at first you don't know that, because you've been told carrots are healthy for you for so long that you sort of assume they're fine. Fruit's another big one I think a lot of people struggle with, because, you know, there's such a belief system that fruit is good for you. It's just inherently a good thing. That's what people think. So when you get told actually it's really full of sugar, they're like, but it's not as bad as a Mars bar or as a chocolate bar. No, it might not be as bad in terms of the amount of sugar in it. Or it might be, I don't know. It depends what the fruit is, but actually it's still full of sugar.
And
they
your
find
body
that really
still has the same reaction to it as well. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Your body doesn't go, oh, guys, stand down, it's fruit. It's all right.
Fruit, it's fine.
It's only fructose. Yeah, that's fine.
No,
of course it's not.
It reacts in the same way. And I think it's the same as like some sugar alcohols, which are higher on the glycemic index, like maltitol, for instance, which is in a lot of like diabetic products or
that
low,
annoys me a lot, that
keto low carb low sugar products, a lot of protein bars, and that it winds me up. I'm like, there are so many other ingredients that you can use other than something than that, because your body has the same reaction to something, to maltitol, than it does to sugar.
Well, the sweetener thing annoys me, and I've realized actually, I think the way the market works is there are some products that sell themselves as being sugar free. And they do that because they realize that a lot of people in the general public will appreciate that sugar is not good for us. And they might not know it's bad for you, but they might just think it's not a good thing. So they'd rather have something sweet without the sort of sugary you know, impact. But they don't really know, understand what's doing it, what it's doing to their blood sugar. Then I think there's people like us on the other side of the spectrum who are like, no, actually, we know that carbs become sugar in our blood. We know that what the damage that and the inflammation issues that happen with regards to things like sugar, as well as the insulin resistance and all that metabolic damage as well. So we want to reduce that impact as much as possible. And I notice then you've got other products, which hopefully Digital Guilt Free is, well, I say hopefully it is, where we focus on sweeteners that aren't going to spike your blood sugar in any way, because that's not acceptable. And I think they're different kind of products for different people. But it does wind me up when I see a product that is full of maltitol and I think, right, somebody's eating that thinking it's sugar-free. They're being lied to, is a bit strong, but they are being misled. Because they are, 100%. It is sugar-free, but it is actually going to impact on them.
Yeah, and I think, you know, because people read sugar-free or they read fat-free, which we should probably get into.
Right, that annoys me too. Right? Let's go for that one.
but I've seen it on like on keto Facebook groups as well. I'm on, you know, I'm a member of quite a few of them, and people going, is this okay? And showing the label and like one of the first ingredients is maltitol, and you just go, no. It's not okay.
Yeah.
Yes, it's yes, the carbs are low, technically, but your body's going to have the same reaction to that. That's going to raise your blood sugar and it's going to knock you out of ketosis.
It's sad, actually, isn't it? Because a lot of people, like you were saying about being on the ship, it's the same, isn't it? You might be trying to make the best food choice you can and not realizing the impact you're having. And then, you know, no wonder people are stalling in their weight loss or they're not getting the, you know, the reversal of the symptoms that they're experiencing because they're still having this problem. That is really sad, actually. And I think education's key on that. If the marketplace knew, if people understood what was good and what was bad, then those brands would have to change what they did because people wouldn't buy them anymore. I think that's the thing, isn't it? If you educate your mind, then you'll be able to make those good choices.
Absolutely. I agree. Yeah. I agree.
So I actually learned a little quote today, and I think it relates to that, actually. Apparently, Benjamin Franklin said, along the lines, and I'm paraphrasing, you should empty your pockets to feed your mind, and then your mind will fill your pockets. And I think that's so true. Like, you know, invest everything you have to learn and use your time and everything to learn as much as you can. And the more you learn, the more that will benefit you financially. But I think that's also true with health as well. The more you understand, the more you learn, the way better off you'll be. Because, you know, that understanding and knowledge will then take you places. It will help you get to the results you want. And I think that's really important.
I love that. Yeah, definitely. It's really important.
So, okay, I was going to ask you then about the working out and stuff, because you said you're going to the gym quite often and you said you fast beforehand. You're then using exogenous ketones as a bit of an energy source when you're doing it. Mm-hmm. So what would a day now look like for you? So you're doing the working out and whatnot and the fasting. When would you eat? What sort of meals would you eat?
Yeah, so like, for instance, on a day like today, I don't start till late. So I start at 2 o'clock. So what I would normally do is go for my workout in the morning, fasted, wake up. But on the way to my workout, have my ketones, get to the gym, do my workout. And then after that, if I'm feeling a little bit hungry, which it depends on how much weightlifting I've done. If I've done a lot of weightlifting, I don't feel hungry straight after. I will have a protein shake, like a low-carb protein shake. Or we do have low-carb protein with ketones added into it as well. Which is kind of an extra additional energy boost after a workout. But then I would have lunch probably around 1 or 2 o'clock on a normal day, kind of just before I leave for work, or if I'm not at work, about lunchtime would be the first time that I eat. I mean, but sometimes I've even gotten to the point where I fast through till 4 o'clock and end up having a really late lunch and then a really late dinner. And that's where me becoming a night, like, you know, me being a night owl comes into play, because then I don't go to bed till like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, which, you know, so many people will say, oh, you shouldn't eat that late. But I think that you should just eat when you're hungry. you know, your body tells you when it needs food. So that's why a lot of the time, if I'm not hungry, I won't eat at 1 or 2 o'clock because it doesn't feel like the right time for me to eat. So I'll just wait until my body tells me I need to eat.
Yeah, no, that's great. And what sort of meals do you eat then? Like, are you more kind of carnivore at the moment, or are you more kind of just low carb? What sort of things do you prepare?
I'm very carnivore at the minute. A lot, my meals revolve a lot around meat. It's normally steak and veg, or chicken and veg. you know, cooked in some kind of way. Like, I do different things, or I cook it in butter and cream, or you know, or do like chicken wings or things like that. It's very much meat based.
Okay.
because I think that's, for me, that's where I get most satiation. That's kind of what fills me up. It's protein, isn't it? So it's what, it kind of what fills me up and satisfies me more than anything else, really.
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean. I think even now I still feel a bit like decadent eating steak. I mean, I don't eat it actually massively often, at least once a week. But, you know, I don't eat it every day, for instance, although I'd love to. But I always feel like, oh, it's a bit decadent, this. And it's just a mindset, isn't it? It's ridiculous. But actually,
it is,
it's a delicious, lovely meal. You know, you should enjoy it.
Absolutely. And my, you know, and my dad always says to me, he's like, you have steak again. It's like, all right, then. I'm like, it's fine, I can have it, it's fine. But yeah, I mean, where I'm working at the minute, I get a lot of really cheap meat as well, so I get like, I feel even more decadent because some of the things I'm eating at the minute are like really expensive. I'm working for Waitrose at the minute in one of the warehouses, and we we have something called a partner shop where anything that's going out of date gets massively reduced. So like yesterday I bought lamb ribs.
Lovely.
I know. And we get like big, massive beef joints and things like that. So, yeah, we have very nice things come through.
That sounds like an amazing job. Wow. Yeah, or okay. Like
duck burgers the other day I had, which...
How far away are you from Cambridge, by the way? Whereabouts in the country are you?
I'm just outside Harlow. I'm about 40 minutes away from Cambridge. I was actually in Cambridge. There you go, right.
I'll be there tonight Tuesday. With the boot open. Just chuck a load of meat in the back, and I'll send the money over. Okay, because that sounds like a hell of an opportunity to go for. Amazing.
Oh, it's definitely cut down my food bill, I tell you that. Yeah.
So, what's it like then, going from like being on ship then to suddenly being grounded? And in your case, that literally is the case, right? For the last 13 months. I mean, being back at home with other people, and I know you do your own cooking and everything, but you said, you know, you've got more control in some regards because you're not just being cooked for by a kitchen on a ship. But at the same time, you're now living with other people who, I don't know if your mum still does low carb and keto, but you know, your dad, you said, doesn't, and your dad and your brother certainly doesn't, does he? So is that ever an issue at all?
Yeah, it has been. And my mum wasn't low carb and keto for a very long time, but she's actually just literally in the last month or so joined me again.
Okay.
And in kind of, you know, being with me, which is nice. It's nice to have that support, and actually it's made me better and much more conscientious. I went back to kind of basics when she restarted again. Went back to basics with her, went back to tracking things. But it's difficult because my dad just eats whatever he likes, as does my brother, and they've got metabolisms like you wouldn't believe as well. So I mean, that's hard in the fact that if it were my house, I would never buy those things. They would never be in the house as a temptation.
Exactly. This is exactly the thing I was going to raise there, because, you know, having kids, I find that happens as well. You know, things come into the house, especially from people outside and like in the family who might give stuff to kids. And I think, oh, I'd love to eat that. Something really simple. This is going to sound to some people like really lame, and to other people, they completely unrelate to this. But, you know, when we have crumpets in the house, something just that simple, I just think a crumpet with butter, I would adore to have that. And but if I have had it, I feel terrible afterwards. And I just can't. And I realize, you know, I bloat and all the rest of it, and it stalls me in terms of my weight loss and all the rest. So I'm like, no, I can't do this. And also, it's never one crumpet. It's like one crumpet one day and one crumpet the next day, and then two crumpets the next day after that. Yeah. And I just think environment is so important to make it conducive to the life you want to live and to get you into the habits. But it's hard when somebody else is doing something very different to you in the same kitchen, and you're having to face it and go, oh, I wish I could eat that.
Yeah, 100%. My thing is bagels.
And my bagels,
my dad eats a lot of bagels, and they're always in the kitchen. And it's that smell when they're toasted as well.
Right.
And you just go, oh, wish I could eat that, but if I ate that,
and that's the thing,
so
you wouldn't have that in your house when you've got your own kitchen and your own space, you know.
No.
And
it's, I don't even think I'd have a toaster, to be honest.
They're no really point. Carby bagels, aren't they? They're like particularly high in carbs. I remember
so
seeing
high
that.
Because they're so dense.
Yeah,
They're very high in carbs. But yeah, just silly things like that. And my mum's got, you know, got a bread maker as well, and makes bread every now and then. So you've got that smell of fresh bread in the house. You just think, this is helpful.
Yeah. Although you're back on ship and then you've got like other people cooking things for you. It's tricky, isn't it? It is tricky.
It is.
I think John Unwin says, and I think it's a good idea to have a space like a cupboard or something that's for you, or a space that's for them. And, you know, you just have a bit of separation, because you shouldn't have to, you know, reach mm-hmm. past the thing that you love eating to get the thing behind it, which you also like eating, but it maybe you might have, you know, well, in some cases, an addiction to other foods, and you've got it in your face. You know, if you were an alcoholic and you had to like put your hand into the fridge to go and get some, I don't know, celery, and you had a bottle of scotch in front of you, like, you know, it might be difficult. And I think a lot of people, and I think I include myself in this, probably do have like an addiction to carbs in some sense, especially like I find like bread and stuff. I really just love the stuff, even though I feel ill eating it sometimes. I just think it's gorgeous. And, you know, I don't want it in my house, really. Yeah. I want to get rid of it.
Well, that, yeah, absolutely. And that's, you know, that's like addiction down to a T. It's like, you know that it's wrong for you. Yeah. And it makes you feel crappy afterwards sometimes, but you do it anyway because you love it at the time. Yeah.
Exactly.
But yeah, I mean, their own cupboard thing. I've got my own little fridge here as well. I think that was one of my things when I came back. I'm not used to living at home. I'm normally away, you know, 90% of the year, and I'll come back for a month here or kind of here and there, and it's fleeting. You know, I come in, it's great because I'm only home for 4 weeks. I get to see everyone and do whatever. And living, you know, with other people is quite difficult, especially living with your parents.
And also the novelty factor, because you know what? You come back for 4 weeks and you're a star. They haven't seen you for ages. Nicole, mom, dad, oh, she could do no wrong. She's amazing. After 13 months, is it the same?
No, it's well and truly wore off now, I think.
For everyone concerned. Oh, you're still here. Great.
Yeah, brilliant. Cool. Can you contribute to housework? Yes. Okay.
Yeah. But the morning, that's my terms. Okay.
Yeah, oh, right. Exactly. Yeah. But that was one of the things that I needed. I needed my own space. You know, I needed my own space. I needed my own, you know, my own fridge, cupboard, because I, you know, I do a lot of my own cooking because my eating habits are different. I also eat at different times to them. So, you know, I don't necessarily eat at 6 o'clock in the evening. That's not necessarily when I have my dinner. So having that space was really important to me, and having that place for my stuff definitely was important. And
that's
I think that it's important for anyone. I think for mental health as well, you know, having your own space and your own things.
I think adults need that, don't they, in particular?
Definitely.
You know, it's important.
Yeah.
Just out of interest, as we're recording this in April, so it'll come out probably about May-ish time. What do you know, like, roughly what's happening this summer with regards to the ships and that sort of thing? Has there been, I mean, I've not followed it from that point of view.
I wish that I knew. So we get updates from, I was working for Carnival, so we get the updates from the company quite regularly.
Okay.
And it's not, there's no date. Obviously, everything at the minute for them is cancelled until the end of June. But it's just working with the CDC and the restrictions. At the minute, it's looking like everybody's going to have to be vaccinated to go on a ship and also to work on a ship. Luckily,
and that's tricky when it's an international thing. I mean, it's not like you've just got a British company in Britain or American company in America. You've got a ship going to multiple countries and ports.
But also with multiple nationalities in the crew. And I think that the rollout of vaccines in different countries is vastly different. And a lot of crew are from countries that don't necessarily have the same rollout that we have here in the UK or in America, although the UK is better than America at the minute. You know, I've had my first vaccine and I've got my second one in May. I've got my second one in May. So, you know, I will be vaccinated by the time they want to go back, which is good. And it puts me in kind of a good position. I just was lucky that I went and worked as a carer. I still do a little bit of it now, but it was something before I work where it worked, where I work now, I wanted to do something that meant I could kind of get out of the house, and also something that felt worthwhile, like I was giving something back. It's very hard, but a very rewarding job as well.
I imagine it must be. And how's it been? When you say carer, are you going to an individual's house or is it to a home?
It was home visit care. Independent living.
There must be a lot of people who are quite isolated because of the pandemic and being cut off from their families and, you know, had to isolate. That's really quite sad, isn't it?
It's hard. Yeah, it's hard to see as well, but you kind of get used to it. When I first started, I remember how difficult it was going in and seeing, you know, the only people they see all day are carers or nurses sometimes.
Yeah.
You know,
and even then it's limited, isn't
hard.
It? So they don't go in saying, hey, do you want to be here like for the afternoon and hang out, whatever. It's probably like put down to maybe, I don't know, like a 15-minute meeting, is it? Or is that too long?
It depends. Anything half an hour to an hour, but you're in full PPE as well, so they can't even see your full face.
Oh, my word.
Because of COVID, you have to be in full feet. You have to wear a mask and an apron and gloves and, you know, be COVID safe, obviously, because they're the most vulnerable as well. So, yeah.
Well, I just want to say that's amazing what you do. And I think that must have a massive impact for a lot of people. So well done, Nicole, for doing that. And and even though it's as wonderful a thing you're doing, I hope that it comes to an end so you can go back on the ships, because that's clearly where your heart is and your passion. Yes. And you know, it'd be really awkward now if I asked you to sing on a podcast. I totally appreciate that. But is there a place where people can check out your career? Is there like videos online and a YouTube channel?
Absolutely. I have a YouTube channel. I've just been recording actually a little bit more because I stopped for a little while, but I have been recording more recently, and I have a YouTube channel, and it's the username on it is Nicole X Jade, so it'd be youtube.com/NicoleXJade.
And that's where excellent
all of my videos are.
Okay, excellent. And how can people connect with you? What's the best platforms to get you
on? Am mostly on Instagram. My keto, I've got a keto and low carb account, and that's Nicole_keto_journey.
I'm on there now, and I can see it was somebody's very special birthday a few days ago.
It was my 30th.
Happy 30th birthday. There you go. I'm almost exactly 10 years older than you. I turned 40 this year in January. So there you go. Well, congratulations. Happy birthday. Okay, just awkward, isn't it? Yeah, nobody needs me singing at them to cheer them up. So happy birthday, Nicole. That's fantastic news.
Thank you very much.
That's
Thank
great.
You.
Okay, so what I was going to say is while we round off the podcast today, I just want to think about the person who might be where you were a few years ago with this information and the problems that they're having when you're in Cyprus. And what sort of words of wisdom or advice would you just like to share with them as a bit of a, you know, this might work for you?
I would say, you know, don't suffer in silence. I think it's always really important to speak to the people around you, speak to your family and speak to your friends, especially, you know, with a chronic illness that's invisible or, you know, something that other people can't see, they don't understand it. I think talking to people and explaining how you're feeling is important and getting the right answers. I sat on it for a long time and wasn't as forceful and pushy as I should have been potentially to get the right answers in a timely fashion, but I just, you know, persevere, because there is always an answer to what's happening to you. It does take time, but you have to just persevere and kind of see the light at the end of the tunnel, as it were. And you know, ask to be referred to a specialist. You know, ask questions, because it's important to ask the right questions, because you know, not everyone always necessarily has the answers that you need, and you need to, you know, find the answers. And I think, you know, medicine and healthcare has advanced in so much, and they understand a lot more about these things. So don't suffer in silence is my biggest thing. Just, you know, get help, get the answers that you need, and persevere with it.
I mean, the sad reality as well is that, unfortunately, you know, the NHS and people like that, the doctors can only treat you with, you know, for an illness that they can heal. But if your diet is making you sick, that's the first port of call to put that bit right, isn't it? Because no matter what medication or whatever treatment they give you, it's never going to put right a bad diet, is it? And if that diet's bad for, you know, you, it might not be bad to somebody else, but it's bad for you, then you have to make the changes, don't you, for your own sanity,
absolutely,
for your own benefit.
And I was just lucky that the specialist I saw had done research above and beyond his job.
You know,
outside of what he does, he had done this additional research, and that's, you know, the only reason I was recommended what I was recommended, and I was very lucky at the time that he had. So yeah, I think
that's true. Actually, you just think, what if you had a different specialist or whatever on that day? Would you still now be in pain? And I really hope not. That'd be awful, wouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, Nicole, thank you so much for coming on UK Low Carb today. Really enjoyed our chat. And I feel like, yeah, that's justified after you came onto the big conversation. We really had to have this conversation, and it's been way better than I could have imagined. So thank you so much for coming on. And I just hope you'll be back on a ship soon, singing your heart out, and And then, you know, and then being one of those boring keto people at the midnight mess saying, no, thank you, not for me.
I'm just going to sit and drink my water. I'll be fine. Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for having me.
No worries. Take care.
Thank you.
Hello, you're still there? Dan here. I can see you're one of the keen ones because you're still listening. So, got a very simple request. Please go and rate and review this podcast now on Apple if you haven't done so already. And I'll read it out next week on the show. So go and do that. Hear about your review next week. Everyone's a winner. Right, I'm going to shoot off now. Take care. Have a lovely week. See you next Friday.